Greetings, folks. It is time for Mac Geek Gab, and I'll bring us our quick tip of the week. I've been traveling quite a bit lately. I'm traveling again this week. And when I park my car at the airport, I take a picture of the parking sign that shows me the level and the location on the level. That's part of the tip. But the biggest part is favorite that picture, because if you're traveling, chances are you're about to go take a bunch of pictures, and having to scroll back through and figure out where that one picture is can be a real pain in the neck when you've just gotten off a long flight. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1030 for Monday, March 25th, Tolkien Reading Day 2024. Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in quick tips like that, or we share quick tips like that. You send in questions that we answer. You send in cool stuff found. We share all of that. We string it together into an agenda such that we all have the best odds at learning at least five new things every single time we get together. Sponsors for this episode include ZocDoc.com/MGG, where you can sign up for free and download the app today. Backblaze.com/MGG, where you can get their fully featured no risk free trial, and manscaped.com, where coupon code MGG gets you 20% off and free shipping. And if you don't know that I've been using ChatGPT to write my ad scripts and make them a little bit interesting and even a little quirky, I think you'll agree that knowing which three sponsors we have today, you're going to want to listen to what ChatGPT had me say. We'll talk more about those in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And also here in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete, and good to be back on the States. Dave, I've been traveling a little bit lately, too. You may know that.
I did. I figured that out. Yeah.
My trick is, because sometimes I will go months at a time without being at my car that I keep in Memphis.
Oh,
right. So, geez. You know, where is that darn thing? And I have wandered the parking lot before I came up with this method, which is I'll put it in reminders. I'll create a reminder for the date that I'm expected to return, and I'll write down where the car is there. So when I land, it comes up. Oh, hey, you know, here's where your car is. And if I'm going to go out to the car that day, fine. If not, I'll move it to the next time I expect to be in Memphis and need my car. So, maybe I should take a picture, put it in that reminder, and we've got a hybrid of what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And you can easily, I think you can put a picture in a reminder.
I'm pretty sure. You can put notes and URLs and invitations and all kinds of stuff. So
Oh, I like that. That's great. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, anything I can do not to have to think, especially, and you know, you do travel frequently, far more than most people, and certainly far more than me. Lately, you know, we did CES, then I went somewhere, and then I was in Mexico, and then I was at
South by,
and then this week at Podcast Movement, getting off the plane. It's like, often if it's been months since I've traveled, I will generally remember where I parked, but you know, getting off the plane after, like, even after just Mexico, it was like, yeah, I remember where I parked with Pete.
No, we parked there for CES.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, yeah, we had that spot for CES. We actually had a great spot for CES.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, it was good. But it's like, but that's what I remember. And it's like, yeah, but I don't have that one now. So,
yeah.
Another tip for parking at the airport that I will share, and this definitely works at Boston Logan, and I only share it because I love you. We don't want to share this with everyone. At Boston Logan, it's a multi-level garage. And there will be signs that say this level is full, this level's full, you got to go park on that level. I like to park on the level where I don't have to put me and my luggage in an elevator to go up or down. But that level is always, there's always a sign that says this level is full. Here's the thing. The person that is the first one to leave the level is not the person who changes that sign. And so the nice part about that sign, it is deterring everyone who's arriving from even thinking about looking on that level. I always just go to that level and invariably find a spot, usually one very close to the door. It's quite fantastic. So I share that tip because I love you all. Please don't ruin it for us.
I'll add the one to that, which is often if you use prepaid parking. We got turned away for the first time ever. We prepaid and we got to the place and they're like, oh yeah, no, we're full, but go down the street to the, you know, to this address and they'll take care of you. And they're like, yeah, you didn't prepay here and we don't have any spots either. Cause it was spring break winter break for the schools. And so we wound up, you know, have a backup is I guess. My,
yeah.
You know, always back up your computers, back up your parking plan.
And does nobody use the maps thing? I guess that wouldn't really work for a multi-level garage, but like, doesn't maps like automatically pin? I never use the feature. It's like you get a pin of where you park.
It does start.
At least
doing
my iPhone does that from time to time. I live in a small town, so I never lose my car, but
I've used that in parking lots where it's a, you know, fixed level, ground level kind of thing. I don't know how well it does in a garage because it's relying on GPS. And I don't know how good the GPS is in any given garage. Like, I mean, I'm sure it varies. So,
that ends it for the Travel Geek Gab, folks.
That's right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all. Simon has a tip about Macs. Is it okay if I share something about computers, guys, on
we
Travel Geek
do
Gab
that.
Here?
Great. Yeah.
Simon says, most of us know and love Quick Look, where you press the space bar in the Finder. Quick Look in the Finder, where you highlight a file, you press the space bar, and it shows you some quick look at the file. If it's text, it shows you the contents. If it's an image, it shows you the image. And then most of us also know, but this might be a quick tip to some, that you can use the arrow keys up and down to move to other files, and it will just like move the quick look around to other files, which is great. If you've got, you know, four images that you're trying to figure out which one, you quick look one of them. If it's not it, drive yourself around with the arrow keys and it finds it there, right? And then when you're done, you hit the space bar again, quick look goes away. So all of that was the setup from Simon, but really there's like four quick tips baked in to the setup. Simon says, did you also know that if instead of tapping the space bar, if you press and hold the space bar, it shows you the file. When you let go of the space bar, it goes away. So if you know you just want a truly quick, it's like the quick look, right? Because instead of it leaving quick look on the screen, if you hold the space bar down, it's only up on the screen for as long as you hold it down and then you release it. So,
and you know, I don't know what the timing is. I'm sure that's somewhere set in the settings, how many milliseconds.
Yeah.
But that is one of those tips that instantly became part of my workflow. It's like,
Yep. Yeah, it works the way you would expect it to work.
Yeah.
Like it, the timing for me anyway was exactly what I thought it should be.
Right.
Whatever that is.
I'm surprised I hadn't stumbled across that one before.
But that's what I mean about it being perfect.
Yeah.
Right? Is that we didn't stumble on it. Like it didn't stick once and we wondered why. It just, like, if you hold it long enough, I don't know.
I've been using it all week now.
Yeah,
it's
same.
Like, oh.
Did you know about this, Adam?
Not at all. I'm going to try it now.
Yeah.
No, not right now. But I mean,
I got you.
Yeah. Moving forward.
Yeah. Let's see. Doug brings us our next quick tip. He says, I have set up some shortcuts that, I guess he has two things. He says, I know you recently mentioned Carabiner Elements on the show. He says, I'm a FileMaker developer. And in FileMaker Pro, the return and enter key perform severely different functions at times. Consequently, my brain cannot handle the fact that my MacBook does not have an enter key. So I use Carabiner Elements for one simple thing. I reprogram the right side of the keyboard's command key to be the enter key. My brain is now trained to use that key as it is closer on my extended keyboard at the office, and it has removed many great frustrations. Yeah, that's something worth it. The idea that he mapped only one of his command keys, the one on the right, is interesting because as the way that I type, when I hit the command key, it is often the left side command key. I do some things where I'm using my keyboard in a like in a different way, where the right side command key is actually the one I use. But when I'm typing or whatever, it just happens to be the left one. I hold the command key with the left hand and hit whatever the key is with the right hand. So, and things like Carabiner Elements can differentiate between the two. So
I'm same with the left, likely because that's where X, C, and V are.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, as I'm thinking about this, the only place that I use the right command key, believe it or not, is FileMaker. And because it's Travel Geek Gab today, I will share that years ago, I built a FileMaker database that is my trip packing list. And I have all of each item is in there. I have flags for whether it's for like a business trip or a personal trip, or if it's something that I would bring one time and then delete later. And then I also have it I put in the dates of when I'm leaving and when I'm coming back. And I have some items like, say, underwear, that the quantity is dependent on the trip length. And I have others like my iPhone charger where it is not. And I have that flag. And so I have it calculate how many of any given thing I need to bring. But it works out great. What I do is, where this command key tip comes in, is I do my search, business trip, personal trip, narrow it down. And then I look at everything that was filtered out from the search first to make sure that I didn't unintentionally with my, you know, broad search filter something out. And I click through with the mouse on my right side every item. And if I want to move it into the group that I would pack, because I'm looking at the omitted things, I want to omit it from the omitted group, and that's Command T in FileMaker. And so for that, my left hand on the keyboard is perfect with my right thumb, or the thumb on my left hand, which is on the right side of my left hand. That's how most of us work. I do Command T with my thumb and my pinky, and yep. Sorry.
Says the guy in the Ghostbusters uniform, nerd.
Yes. I am hi, my name's Dave, and I'm a nerd. Yeah. I love FileMaker for that. Yeah. But he does have another tip, but if there's anything on this one, do you have something to add on this one, Pete?
I was just going to ask if you thought Better Touch Tool might remap that key as well.
It probably would, as would Keyboard Maestro. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. There's right. You're
so
right.
If you already have one of those other two programs,
correct. Yeah. Don't drive yourself. You don't need something new. Just go and get, you use whatever one you have. So
yeah.
I'll put all three of those in the show notes for everyone to enjoy. And then his second tip is he says, I've set up some shortcuts that I use to start and end Zoom calls. My house is very automated, so it closes the blinds, turns on the proper lighting, including a cool little lamp that I have to indicate to the rest of the house that I'm on a call, like the recording light in a studio. I like this. Opens Zoom, turns on Stage Manager. Oh, good use for Stage Manager. And finally, he says, I needed to set my screen resolution to a lower value, as many of my clients are working on much smaller screens. Ah, so when he shares his screen, they don't get stuck with his 27-inch monitor. I could not find a way to do this natively in Shortcuts, but I did find this cool little utility on the Mac App Store called Display Menu that is Apple scriptable. Ah, I like this. That's good. Mm-hmm. And he says, adding a short Apple script to the shortcut solved all my issues. And he just has an Apple script that says to tell Display Menu to set the screen resolution to what he wanted it set to. That's really interesting. So Display Menu, first of all, I love that you have this shortcut / automation that configures your computer and your house for Zoom calls. I basically have the same thing here in the podcast studio that I when I launch like Mac Geek Gab, it sets the image on the screen behind me, turns on the light, turns off my my air purifier. And it does all the things, right? Launches all the apps that I need. I have thought about putting a red light out the side of the studio that goes on when I'm in podcasting focus mode. So
closed set, do not disturb.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why not? Like,
yeah.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Huh. Display Menu. I like, okay. Yeah. That's, yeah, interesting. Anything to add to this before we move on here?
Nope, just great tip again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
man. Okay. I kind of want to, like, pause the show and go, like, experiment with some of this stuff, but I won't. speaking of Zoom, this dawned on me this week. Somebody online was talking about, I think it was Allison Sheridan was talking about the microphone that we mentioned on the show a while back, and that it has a noisy mute switch, and that's not good for, like, podcasting or even Zoom calls. And I thought about this, and I've thought about it a lot. If you are using Zoom without headphones, so you are using, you know, you have your speakers in your environment, wherever that is, that's the sound that you're getting from the your participants on the Zoom call, and then you have your microphone, obviously, that's picking up you. Perhaps it doesn't need to be said, but I'm going to say it. Your microphone also picks up the sound of the people that are coming out of your speakers, albeit at a lower volume. And Zoom has its echo cancellation logic in there that knows to listen for that and adapt itself and adjust so that it's not sending that audio back to folks and having them get an echo. If you need to mute yourself and you use the microphone's mute button and it is truly muting the microphone, there are some mics where the mute button on the microphone actually tells Zoom to do its software mute. That's different. But most microphones don't have that functionality, that tie-in. So if you mute your microphone, Zoom will eventually think that the sound that's coming out of your speakers is not making it to your microphone, and it will lower its threshold for echo cancellation such that when you unmute your microphone, it's going to be flooded with this sound that was always there, and people on the call will get echoes. So if you're on a Zoom call and you need to mute yourself, I highly, especially if you're using your speakers. If you're on headphones, it's kind of a different story. But because hopefully your headphones aren't so loud that it's bleeding into your microphone. And if they are, please protect your hearing. Use the Zoom mute. Use the software mute inside Zoom. And you can get, you know, there's buttons that you can buy if you want to automate that. So that you have like a button on your desk so you don't have to dig through Windows and do it. Or you can use keyboard shortcuts from any of the things we just mentioned, Carabiner Elements and, you know, Keyboard Maestro and all that stuff. So that's my tip. Anyway,
you could also use push to talk, right? I mean,
on Zoom, you could use push to talk as well. Yeah. But
which is the space bar when you're in mute, I think.
Yep,
right. I think
that's
by default, it's a space bar. So if you're already muted, if you just hold the space bar down, that'll unmute you. Let go of the space bar. You're muted again.
As long as Zoom is the frontmost app.
Well, yeah.
I know a lot of people, especially on audio-only Zoom calls, might not have Zoom as the frontmost app all the time. Just saying.
Yeah, I've been in those meetings, too.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it SNL? Did the which one of them did the, if real-life meetings were like Zoom meetings? And they're all sitting at the conference table, and the one guy's sitting there talking, and they're like, dude, you're on mute. You're on mute. Because nothing, no sound's coming out.
No sound, yeah, sure.
And then all of a sudden, the guy disappears, and he's like, yeah, sorry, I got booted. He comes back in.
Yeah. Yepper. Yep. So just be aware of it that you are limiting Zoom's ability to do its echo cancellation if you're using the microphone's mute. If it's all happening through speakers. Again, headphones sort of changes this calculus, or at least I hope it does. Yeah. All right. What else do we have for quick tips here? Adam, you want to take us to Bob?
Yeah, I got to put a little context on this. A while, I can't remember which show it was, but a few shows back, we were talking about backing up your family's laptops and remotely. So I mentioned, you know, my daughter's gone off to college, and we're how do we do backups when you've got computers in different places, or people who don't hook them to the network, or who don't hook them physically to anything, and they're just sitting on the network. And so Bob wrote, and he says, I have a similar problem in that there are mostly MacBook Pro laptops in the family. Using an older Mac as a backup server with Carbon Copy Cloner running on that server, he says you can pull backups from the MacBook and MacBook Pro laptops in the house. This is something I have not played around with, Carbon Copy Cloner, which is great. He says, actually, it can pull backups from any Mac that is accessible even across the internet via a secure encrypted connection. And if the MacBook Pro is set to wait for network access, you can get back backups from sleeping Macs. Luckily, at night, my family Macs are all on their chargers. In my case, it's an old Mac with a network-mounted Synology drive, but it could be just a large backup drive, two or three, directly attached to the Mac. Carbon Copy Cloner backup utility on the server Mac has scheduled tasks for each MacBook Pro. And at one time, there was a task for my mom's iMac 300 miles away. Yes, I had to set up port forwarding on my mom's router and let that make an SSH connection, but I was able to specify a high-numbered port on the internet-facing side that went to the iMac's port 22, which keeps the script kiddies from pounding on port 22.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That is a great tip, and I might have to play around with that. Yeah.
Really?
I don't know why I haven't thought of that, but I have Carbon Copy Cloner.
Yeah, same. I had no idea. I never thought to use it this way. And to further thwart the script kiddies, you could use a VPN to connect to your mom's network so there isn't just this wide open port to the internet. But you could, yes, beat me to it with the best answer, which is Tailscale. Yeah, sort of. Sharing a tailnet with a family member is like it has to be the right family member.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Fun. I like it. I love learning stuff. This show's great. I'm glad this show exists because I feel like most weeks I get to learn the most. So,
right.
Yeah. You want to take us to Martin, Pete, speaking of learning the most?
I'm going to do something. Yeah. Cause I learned something, kind of the hard way here. And so this may be a not so quick tip.
Okay.
Because I've got questions when we're done.
Okay. So,
but Martin writes in, he says, in the latest episode of MGG, the show was talking about iCloud Sync, which I use across all my devices. One thing I've found is that if I want a temporary folder on my desktop, but not for other devices, I create a folder and name it whatever. Okay, this Mac only.
Sure.
And then he puts on the extension .nosync, .nosync. And then he hides the extension in folder preferences. That provides a way of not syncing that folder, which I find very useful. I hope you find this helpful. Take care and don't get caught. That's brilliant.
Okay. I knew and forgot about the .nosync thing. So I am ever so thankful for the reminder of that. The idea of hiding the extension on that folder, like going into folder preferences.
That could be problematic.
Well, or not. Like, I kind of like it. Like, it cleans up the view, and but you're right. If you forget.
How come that didn't get synced?
You're right.
You said it that way, dude.
Right, because you told me not
do
to.
Do that.
But .nosync. I like that. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good.
Isn't that brilliant?
Couldn't you just put a tag on that instead, right? So you can identify which ones have nosync on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then wouldn't it also give it a color?
Yes, it would give it a color.
There you go. That was going to be my other thing. It's either a tag or there's the set app, which you can change your icon of a folder.
Oh, right.
I forget the name of that
you
app.
You can change your icon of a folder without a third-party app.
Right. It happens to make it super easy.
Right.
Drag it what you want it to look like. Boom. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... So I went to go try this and got taken down a huge rabbit hole because I went, wait a minute. I logged into iCloud Drive.
Okay.
And looked at it and I go, that doesn't look like my desktop. And I've got not one, but two desktops. And I've shared you with some screenshots with Dave pre-show. These are like, now it's like iCloud Drive Archive 1. I've got all these old desktops with files. I'm like, yeah, that was on my desktop. I completely forgot about it. It's gone. It's not on my desktop now. Dave, I'm sure I'm not the only person who's done this. Do you have any idea what on earth I did to myself?
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
I do have ideas about this.
Okay.
So what Pete's describing is on his Mac, if he goes into his home folder, he sees two folders that say iCloud Drive Archive and a second one called iCloud Drive Archive 1. And in each of these is an archive of some former state of an iCloud drive on that Mac. Yeah. And then also in your iCloud drive, if you go to desktop, you see not just a desktop folder, but you also see desktop Pete's MacBook Pro, desktop Pete's MacBook Pro 21. So when you turn on documents and drive syncing in iCloud, it will ask you sometimes if you just want to merge everything, replace everything. We say on the show often, syncing is hard. This is the result of Apple's attempt at the multiple desktops that you see in the iCloud drive are the result of Apple's attempt to not cause you to lose any data when you try to essentially merge, turn on two computers with different desktops for iCloud drive.
Okay.
So
it's like when I went from my MacBook Pro 21 to my 23.
Yeah.
Okay.
But these, in this case, it's an iCloud drive desktop, and then there's these subfolders that are the former desktops of your other computers. The idea is that you, as the user, would go through and take the things out of those folders and put them back on your desktop as you wish. And now you just have one desktop that's sort of synced and everything's fine. The archive ones are when you've turned iCloud Drive off on your computer. It grabs that, archives what you had there, and then sort of returns you to your home desktop folder and your home documents folders and all of that stuff.
So my recommendation then to other folks would be, log into iCloud, go to your iCloud drive and see if you haven't done this to yourself as well. There's that file. I had no idea I was even missing, but
take a look in iCloud on the web, sure, but also look in your home folder to see if you, on all of your Macs, to see if you have these iCloud drive archives. That would be kind of the next thing to do.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just looking in my home folder. Do I see any? Yeah, there they are, archives. Look at that.
Yeah.
Never even noticed those there.
You sent us a screenshot of those. You just didn't realize that they were in your home folder when you sent the screenshot, I think.
Yeah, I don't spend much time in the home folder, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever run into anything related to this, Adam? Have any thoughts to share?
No. I mean, you guys covered that pretty well. I mean, I've seen it. Yeah. But.
Yep.
I just didn't even realize.
All right, folks. You know, we're always here with quick tips and things that are important. And today, we're reminding you that while our gadgets are smart, we've got to be smarter. Remember, March 31st isn't just any other day. It's World Backup Day. And in the spirit of not becoming April Fools, we're all about backing up our digital lives with our sponsor, Backblaze. Now, we've been in the trenches, folks, right? We've seen the horror of data loss and the havoc it wreaks. But with Backblaze, it's like having a digital safety net for just $99 a year. This is the kind of peace of mind that makes even a hard drive crash feel like a minor hiccup. Backblaze automatically keeps a copy of everything, yes, everything, safe in the cloud. Deployment, a breeze. Even if your tech skills stop it, have you tried turning it on and off again? And for those of us managing more than our fair share of devices, their enterprise control is like the Gandalf of data governance, guiding your business data safely across Middle Earth or the internet. Got hit by some ransomware or just accidentally deleted your thesis on the cultural impact of emojis? Well, Backblaze has your back with multiple restore options. And if you're old school, they'll even ship a hard drive to your door with all your data. Not a fit? Send it back within 30 days for a full refund. It's backup with a bow on top. So don't get caught without a backup plan this World Backup Day. Seriously, back up your stuff. Go to backblaze.com/MGG, where you can sign up for a free trial to see why Backblaze is recommended by Inc. magazine. Again, go to backblaze.com/MGG for that no-risk free trial and join the over 55 billion files restored club. Because in the world of tech, it's not about if you'll need a backup, but when. And our thanks to Backblaze for sponsoring this episode. All right, folks, it's spring officially now, which means it's time for spring cleaning. And while you're dusting off those gadgets, don't forget about the gadgets for personal cleanup. I'm talking about one from our sponsor, Manscaped, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Now, look, I'm not the hairiest guy in the tech world, but if I were, I'd be all over this like static on your favorite fleece. This Lawnmower 5.0 is like the gadget to beat all gadgets. Seriously. It's got interchangeable blades for that precision trim or the full mow down, dual LED spotlights so you won't miss a spot even like in the hard to see areas, waterproof, yep, because why not make your shower a one-stop shop for cleanliness? It's got a compact case, you can take it with you everywhere you go. And speaking of travel and comfort, I'm going to California next week. They sent me these Manscaped Boxers 2.0. I love that they use version numbers on their stuff. These things are amazing. They're like cloud storage for all your bits. I'm actually excited about the plane ride to California because I know I'll be in comfort heaven. And the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra isn't the only gadget they have, right? You can get the full grooming experience with Manscaped Signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. So whether you're looking to craft your signature look or clean up that neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. Get 20% off and free shipping with code MGG at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code MGG at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants or wherever else. And our thanks to Manscaped for sponsoring this episode. All right, you know me. I'm always on the lookout for the techiest, slickest solutions to life's little problems. I like to spoil myself a little bit. Well, healthcare is no different. I mean, why wait on hold to book a doctor's appointment when you can find and book the Michael Jordan of doctors with just a few clicks on ZocDoc? ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you book them immediately. There's no more waiting awkwardly on hold. And all these doctors have verified reviews from actual real patients. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance or are located near you or both, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. And sometimes you can even score same-day appointments. Like I said, I've used this and I think you're really going to like it too. Go to ZocDoc.com/MGG and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/MGG. ZocDoc.com/MGG. And our thanks to ZocDoc for sponsoring this episode. All right, we did a bunch of quick tips. Pete, you brought us into questions deftly out of that last quick tip. Why don't you bring us into our first listener question?
I can do that, Dave. I'm sorry. I was looking at quick tips. Which one were we?
Callie.
First listener question. That was Callie, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let me find Callie here. I'm sorry about that. And if you noted me, I missed it. So Callie says, lost. You're not lost, Callie. I am a long time listener, first time asker. I have an Asus RT Alpha X-ray. That's AX88U router in my apartment. I was thinking of moving to a mesh system because there are some spots in here that Wi-Fi ain't so good. So my question is, should I invest on two Unify Express units and Light 8 PoE or something like that? I need to have 6 Ethernet cables to use with my TV, Xbox, Hue Bridge, Harman Kardon soundbar. I'm coming to your place, man. Sounds like you're wired for sound. Mac Mini server and Apple TV for the future. This setup would cost me in Finland around 380 euros, but is it worth it? I could get something like the Asus RTAX 1800U for 68 euros and use it with my AX88U with AI mesh. Do you know, is Asus AI mesh any good? What benefits do I get with Unify, if any? And does it matter in Asus setup if the inferior router is first? It would be, question mark. Thank you for a great show, Callie. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. It's not Calais or something.
It might be Calais. Could be a Swedish name, I think is.
We're going to Americanize it and butcher it right here.
There you go. Yep.
Proudly so.
Yep. So there's actually a lot to dissect here.
Yeah.
I've used the Asus Mesh a little bit. I haven't spent a ton of time with it, but we do have, there are a lot of you out there who use it and love it and have nothing but good things to say about it, and it might be the simplest way to go because you're going to have your, you get to use the tech that you've already got. So you don't have to like decommission something and buy all new stuff. So like, that's where I would go. As far as putting the inferior router first, I think your reason for that, and this is based on a follow-up conversation, was based on the number of ports available and needing more ports in one location versus another, and that sort of defining where the inferior router goes. You can get a switch, a network switch, an inexpensive network switch, to mitigate that and then put the more powerful Wi-Fi access point with its router attached wherever that needs to be. I think you're going to be okay with that in either way, right? Like, you might want the more powerful router as the first, or the more powerful device as the first thing, because it's going to be handling all of your routing and sort of the heavier lifting. And then the other inferior one could be your access point, your satellite, and then just hang a switch off of that so that you can have more Ethernet devices. And that's not unique to Asus. You could do that with any router that, like, there are a lot of people with Eero's who hang a switch off of, you know, the one or two Ethernet ports on the Eero, depending on which model it is, and give themselves lots of ports on essentially a wireless link, which is really nice, because that way, think about this, if you've got, you know, let's say your internet comes in on one side of the house and your TV is on the other side of the house. So you put an Eero or any sort of wireless mesh access point over there, hang a switch off of it so that you've got plenty of ports. Now you plug your TV, your Apple TV, your NVIDIA Shield, and I'm loving the NVIDIA Shield. It's really the best Plex client that exists. Your Xbox, whatever you've got, into the Ethernet ports. Now they're not competing for Wi-Fi space. They're all just using the Ethernet into the Eero, and then the Eero's managing the backhaul, and it can wind up being a more efficient setup. So that's what I would do. That's the first part I wanted to unpack. There's more I want to dig into here, but I'm going to pause here. Adam, do you have anything to add, or Pete?
No, I guess I do. Yeah.
Great.
I mean, I like the idea of, and, you know, we can get caught up in technology and like new great stuff and, you know, that sort of thing. But I like this idea of, hey, if you can use what you have and supplement it and do it at a lower cost, why wouldn't you want to try that first? Like, at least try that first. And if it's like a huge failure, you haven't made a huge investment, yeah, you know, and if it works, great. You've saved a lot of money. And so that concept to me is I think good all the way around, right? Probably one of the reasons why I haven't updated my Intel MacBook Pro, because it still works.
Yeah.
And like, it does everything I need it to do. So as much as I would like a new like M3 MacBook Air or something like that, I don't see spending the money. But yeah. Try little things, do little tweaks if you can and save some money. I think that's a great,
yep,
great thing to do.
Yep. Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. I will put a link to a TP-Link switch that I have used. It's the TP-Link TLSG108. It's an 8-port switch. You can get it on Amazon for like $18 with a $3 coupon or something right now. And if you need less ports than that, fine, but it seems like 8 is always kind of the number where you can buy plenty of ports. Your ports per dollar is maximized. You get up to 16, it starts getting a little more expensive, and it can. These are unmanaged switches. That means they're not smart, that you don't access them with an IP address. And if you want to do that, then you will pay a little more. But for just what you're talking about, I think an unmanaged switch would work totally fine, and it'd save you some money and only add, like I said, $20 or less to the whole thing. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for those who were watching and saw me waving wildly and trying to get Dave's attention, that's exactly what I was going to say. I'm like, why would you do two routers? Wouldn't you just want to put a switch and get yourself more ports?
Yeah.
And yeah. There you go. Yeah. So that's a great answer. I love that.
While we're here, I do I have wanted for a month and a half to talk about the Unify Express, which Callie mentioned, and like, it is cool. I am a huge fan of the Unify stuff. I've used it here in the house at times. It is networking for prosumers, right? And yep. It can also just be for pros, but the flexibility of this stuff and the amount of hardware options that you have with Unify, it's from a company called Ubiquity. They make enterprise-grade stuff. Unify, again, like I said, is their, I'll call it their prosumer line. It is really built for small offices and homes run by geeks. You can, it's all, like, the way you get to manage it, it's super fun. And this, it used to be, when we first talked about Unify on this show years ago, you had to buy, like, you had to buy all the separate parts. When we talk about routers right now, really what we're talking about is a router that has a switch in it, an Ethernet switch in it, and also has a wireless access point in it. So when we say router, in sort of common parlance, and even on this show, we mean this combo device. When we first started talking about Unify stuff, they didn't have a combo router. That you bought a router, you bought a switch, and you bought wireless access points. But that flexibility is what makes it powerful. Part of what makes it powerful, the software behind it also makes it powerful. Since then, Unify has realized that they do have this market of people who want to at least have their core device be this all-in-one. And they came out with a Dream Machine years ago. It was a little expensive and a little underpowered, in my opinion, for what you were doing. This Unify Express, it's $150. It's tiny. It's compact. It's got Wi-Fi in it. It's got your... I'm pretty sure... Yeah, it's got... Well, it has two Ethernet ports. So it has, you know, one for the WAN and one for your LAN. You could add a switch to it. So I guess it really is, it's not an all-in-one. It's a two-in-one, but that's fine. It's just like Eero, right? Eero has their units are have only two Ethernet ports and it works out fine. You can add that switch for $20, $150. You put this there and it can be your router, right? And you can be done. But then you can add Unify gear to the system. And that Unify...
But wait, there's more.
Oh, there's so much more. You want outdoor access points. You want indoor access points that are powered by Ethernet. You want, like, all of the things. And there you want stuff that can go long range. You want stuff that can go short range. You got, like, there are so many options. And it's all part of the Unify ecosystem, meaning it's all compatible with each other. And, oh, and then also with Unify... In addition to the router and the switch and the Wi-Fi access point, you used to need a, God, what was it called? The cloud manager or something. It was something you ran locally. You could run the software on a Mac, I think, or you could run it on yet another box. It was like the management software for all of those devices. So you need a fourth thing. This has that built into it too. So it really is like, yes, here you go. Here's your all-in-one router. That's really, you know, kind of four in one, and do what you need with it, and then you can expand into the Unify universe. So, fun stuff for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's $150.
And it really, really catches fish.
$149, but yeah,
there you go. Wow.
So, yeah, it's like if you're thinking of moving into something new, you know, like there's two routers that I would use in my house that I know of. I have a feeling there might be something from TP-Link in the Archer realm where that would change this for me too. But as far as I am, like, have had hands on and would use in my house as the primary gateway router for my home, it would either be Unify or Synology. That's it. They're like, I'm not saying the others are bad. The others are great. I'm just nerdy and I want control and
granularity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. The other, like Eero's, yeah. Eero's router is great. But I've ignorance is the wrong word to use, but I'll say it anyway. Ignorance is bliss. Like, if I didn't know how great it was to be able to tinker and mess with everything all the time, then I wouldn't know what I was missing. But, however, I don't get that benefit.
That's funny. I went that route because when I moved out here, I needed coverage. I wanted to go mesh, and I just went, I'm just going Orbi Wi-Fi 6.
Yep.
You know, because that was the thing at the time.
Yeah.
It was very expensive, but it was literally, I got the kit, I plugged the things in, done.
Yes.
You know, and I didn't think about it. I ran the little app, it did the setup, you know, and if I want to get in, I can do, you know, the little stuff that I'd like to do, like DHCP, you know, configurations. Yep. And stuff like that. But, you know, overall, I wanted to set it and forget it. If I was going to do it now, I probably would go with the Unify stuff. I think that stuff's great.
Yeah.
I had a client that I worked for that put it in his house, you know, the really high end stuff. Yeah, because he was wiring up everything for Smart and like building his house and like doing this whole thing. And I helped him with some networking, and I was very impressed by that gear. I didn't know about it at the time, but now, yeah, that's high end good stuff.
Yeah, it's high end, but it's not
cheap.
Cheap.
Getting cheaper though, like that's a great price.
Yeah, it really is inexpensive now. I mean, it can be inexpensive now. You can make it as expensive as you want to, but you get all the power and the foundation of the platform for $149. So,
yeah. And as you were describing it, I'm going to age myself. So, I think, too, when you're talking about all the separate pieces versus sort of all in one thing, it reminded me of, you know, do you want a component stereo or do you want a bookshelf system?
Right.
Right.
And I should say that, you know, the Dream machine has evolved. It is now called the Dream Router, and it is only $199. So, you get a 4-port switch with it. 2 of those ports provide power over Ethernet, which is great if you're using access points from Unify that need power over Ethernet. Now you're good to go with that. So, and it's a Wi-Fi 6 access point. So, like I have not tested the Dream Router, but that if we were having this conversation about what you would get, Adam, I would probably steer you toward the Dream Router instead of the Unify Express, because you get a little more ports, you get a little more power in the foundation of what you're doing here. So, Unify they realized that there are people like us. It's probably the best way to say it. And they have built, initially, when I first talked to them, they're like, are you sure you and your audience would be interested in this? And I'm like, yes. And they were like, well, you're going to need like 14 pieces of hardware, and it's going to be, you know, $1,200 worth of stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Send it to me. I have audience members that are going to buy it. And they was true. But now they were like, oh, maybe there are people like this. And then now they've built this stuff that sort of fits and gets you into the Unify world at a price that you would pay for the Orbi or the Eero or whatever. So, yeah, it's great.
And you did say, you know, obviously there are others of which you're not aware of their features entirely.
Correct.
Yet. But, and you did mention ever so briefly, TP-Link showed us some amazing stuff at CES.
I got to follow up.
They're up
on
and
that.
Coming.
Yeah. The Archer line specifically, I believe I am missing something there. And so I'll fix that. I meant to reach out to him after CES. I guess this is still after CES. I might have mentioned that I've been kind of traveling, and the idea of changing my Wi-Fi around just to test something makes my brain hurt with all the travel I've been doing. Because, as you know, when I leave my house, it is not unoccupied, and I must have a reliable system in place for the occupants of my home.
Right. So including in the price of the new router is the price of the divorce lawyer if you screw it up.
Right. Yeah. Even when somebody sends me a free router, it might not be free. Yeah. Yeah. I did just change my internet back from BreezeLine to Fidium because they still couldn't. The block of IPs that they have for New Hampshire is blacklisted all over the internet. I couldn't post on some forums, and I think I mentioned
it
on the show.
Yeah,
so,
you did.
So I'm back to BreezeLine. Back to Fidium. They were very nice about it.
Fidium raised my price, and I called them about a deal. And so for $10 less, they gave me twice as much speed, which I can't use.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's actually a good little tip. You move to from a 1 gigabit to a 2 gigabit connection.
Right.
And you can't use 2 gigabits with your setup. And, you know, first you would need a router that has at least a 2.5 gigabit port to use for the WAN connection. Some routers have that. Some routers don't. For example, the Dream router from Unify, it's a 1 gigabit WAN port, as is the Express. And I'm just confirming that on their site.
Yeah, and I've got the Synology 2600.
Right. The 6600 from Synology has one 2.5 gig port. You can use it either for the LAN or the WAN. But even if you connected that, it's like, well, what device? No one device that you have is going to transmit it more than 1 gigabit. Because as I mentioned, the Synology router has one 2.5 gig port. So your router can talk at 2.5. You could have two Macs doing a gigabit each connected to Ethernet simultaneously over the connection. And that's where you would start to use the 2.5. Or maybe with Wi-Fi 6E potentially, and certainly Wi-Fi 7, you could get into where, but I don't know. I see that 2.5 gig, you know, the 2 gig from Fidium, and I'm like, oh, that sounds amazing. It's like, well,
be nice to be able to use that someday.
For why? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, there are use cases for it, but they don't currently play out for most of us.
Yeah, you can only jam so much down that funnel.
Yep. Yep.
Trying to set me up for Cliff?
I wasn't, but it seems like I did. So please take us to Cliff. Yes.
So the only question I have here, Cliff has a bunch of things, including sort of some feedback and a question. So we'll start there and we can get into some of the other things. Yep. He has feedback and a question, but really what we want to get to is, he says, on the last podcast, you were trying to answer a question, a listener question about new Wi-Fi routers. Well, we're doing that today too.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion, you should have added a quick discussion of which Wi-Fi standard to get. My new setup is 6E to align with my new Apple stuff. But if you don't know better, you may choose a cheaper option, which will not leverage the speed of your devices. So opinions, guys, on, you know, what standard, what should people be buying? You know, I know, Dave, you just mentioned 7.
Yeah.
I got Wi-Fi 6. I don't remember if the Orbi does 6E or not. I don't think it does because it was bought a few years ago. So these things change pretty quick and it gets confusing, I think, which it has what. And, you know, if it's an emerging standard, do you buy the emerging thing, even though it's probably not locked in yet, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it gets confusing. So Wi-Fi 6 uses still uses only the 5 gigahertz band and the 2.4 gigahertz band, right? It is faster because of the signaling protocol that it uses. So it uses a different way of transmitting the data, and therefore it can be faster. Wi-Fi 6E uses the same signaling protocols as Wi-Fi 6. However, it adds a new 6 gigahertz band, which is unused by many other things. So more radio. Now, higher frequency, with all else being equal, the higher the frequency, the shorter the range. You might have more trouble going through walls with the 6 gigahertz. It's still pretty good with it. So 6E is great. And when 6E first came out, I was like, oh, this is what you want for your mesh system. Because we didn't have any Apple devices at the time that had 6E. I think the new phones use 6E. And I think some of the new Macs use 6E too. But I was more excited when they didn't, because it meant the 6 gigahertz band was unfettered, unclouded, and your mesh points could talk to each other over that band without your devices clogging it all up. Over time, that is changing. And of course, we knew that would change. It would be nice if there was like an agreement to say, hey, let's only use this for backhaul, right? But that's not how life works. So that's what 6E does, is it adds that 6 gigahertz band. It also expands on the signaling protocol a little bit, I think lowering some of the latency in the router, but like, I don't know how much that matters. I guess it probably use case, right? Wi-Fi 7 is yet another signaling protocol. But the trick to Wi-Fi 7 is that it uses all of the bands simultaneously. So whereas with Wi-Fi 6E and earlier, you were, you know, you could use Wi-Fi 6 on 2.4 gigahertz, and sometimes it does. It uses that signaling protocol on 2.4 gigahertz. Okay, great. Or it'll use it on 5, or with 6E, it'll use it on 6. But it's one of those three. Whereas Wi-Fi 7 has a new signaling protocol, and it uses can use all three bands simultaneously. So you have this massive amount of throughput. They say it's almost 5 times faster than Wi-Fi 6E.
It's the parallel port of Wi-Fi.
Bingo. Right.
It is. No more serial port.
It's wider band. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the nice part about that is we know, you know, like we were saying, you know, the higher the frequency, the shorter the range. But then also, you know, there's lots of things that clog up 2.4 gigahertz. So that's longer range, but A, slower to begin with, less bandwidth to begin with, and clogged bandwidth, which makes it even worse. With Wi-Fi 7, the tech is using all of the bands simultaneously and using whatever, like maximizing the available throughput without having to jump around. And so you do get, you know, in theory, I haven't tested any Wi-Fi 7 stuff yet. It's out. Various vendors have it. It's wicked expensive, to use a term that would make Massachusetts residents proud. But it's there. So that's what that is. To answer Cliff's question, I'd probably lean more towards 6E, especially for a mesh system, just to get that 6 gigahertz out there. If you've got the money, or if you don't and you don't care about running up your credit cards, then sure, go Wi-Fi 7. It is all backwards compatible, so your Wi-Fi 6 and 6E devices will happily use your Wi-Fi 7 router, and then your router gets to use all of that backhaul. So, yeah.
So the question I have then, do any of these routers we mentioned before, the Unify, the Synology, are they Wi-Fi 7 capable?
No. I don't know if Unify has a Wi-Fi 7 option. I'm pretty sure Eero has their Wi-Fi 7 stuff out, the Max 7s. Yep. Okay. So yeah, there's the Eero Max 7. That would be certainly a place to start. I'm pretty sure Netgear's got one, and I think TP-Link's got one too. So
okay, yeah. Another stupid question. Pick me,
Pete.
So I have my Synology router,
yes,
and I take the Eero Max 7 and I plug it into a switch with an Ethernet. I'm now taking advantage of the Wi-Fi 7 speeds.
Correct.
Okay,
that is correct. Yeah. Okay. And that, I mean, that's, you essentially described the setup that I have here. I'm not using Wi-Fi 7, but I'm using Eero's 6E stuff and connected to my Synology with the Wi-Fi turned off. I still have issues with Synology's Wi-Fi mesh. It's only with one of their devices, but it's there. So I don't know, like, what their, I don't know. It works really well for some people, and it works well for me, except for one device.
So. Okay. So I was going to go buy one.
Go buy one.
One pack in bed. Two starting to get up there, but yeah. A three pack is $1,700.
Exactly. is that the Eero that you're looking at?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it's Max 7.
Like I said, it's wicked expensive. Yeah. I
think I'll get a Vision Pro before.
Yeah.
Let me take it the other direction too, though, because I want to ask the layman's question, which is, how much does this matter for most people? And if you have an opportunity and less of a budget, you know, is, I don't know if there's still even 6 devices out there, but like to get 6 or 6E, like how many people will really benefit from, you know, a lot of this stuff?
Yeah.
Gotta have more speed.
No, it's a great question. And yes, there are plenty of 6 Wi-Fi 6 devices. In fact, the Unify Express and Dream Router are Wi-Fi 6. They're not 6E. Unify may have some 6E devices, but those aren't it, right? So the answer is it's not going to make a huge difference for most people as long as the 5 gigahertz band isn't overly encumbered in your home or wherever it is you are planning on putting this. Then Wi-Fi 6, you probably won't notice a functional difference between 6 and 6E. Yes, your speed tests will, if you have the internet bandwidth, so you would, if you don't have a fiber connection, none of this is going to matter. in terms of internet speeds. Now, if you're doing a lot of data transfer locally, where, you know, and you can't use Ethernet for whatever reason, or Ethernet's cost prohibitive, then yes, 6E might start to make, maybe will start to make a difference, but it might not even then, right? Because you're just expanding that to that new radio frequency range. As long as that 5 gigahertz isn't overly encumbered, I think you're fine. I'm thinking in my head, I am using 6E here at the house, but like when I was testing and using the Synology mesh, that was 6. And it was like I noticed no difference. All of my stuff worked great other than the weird problem I was having with the one access point.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that the answer is for like a lot of things, you know, it's the whole perfect is the enemy of good thing, right?
Correct.
And for a lot of people, good is good enough and you can maybe save some money and, you know, but if you're a nerd and you love this stuff and you want the latest and greatest and you want to tinker and mess with it, then go for it if you have the money. But, you know, I just always want to point out, like a lot of people listen to these shows like this and they think, oh, I got to have this stuff. You know, step back. We all get excited. You know, I have a Vision Pro that I haven't worn for a while.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Still trying to figure out what I'm going to do with it. But yeah. Well, I injured my eye, so that's part of it. But,
right.
Yeah. So I'm going to get back to wearing it. But I was looking last night to see, like, oh, what's new yet? And it doesn't seem like a lot has changed in the last couple of weeks, which is worrisome. But we'll see. I think developers will get an app out there soon.
I heard they put out the app store that you can see without having to be on the Vision Pro to see what's available out there too. So I think that's more of a tease for people like me who don't own one to go, oh, I can go, these are. So along those lines,
I still love it. Absolutely love it. It's absolutely the best device for consuming media. It hands down, in my opinion, I absolutely love it, but it's, again, it's a solo experience. So
yep.
Yeah. But I digress.
No, I agree with you. Like I'm a router nerd. I just said I haven't gone out of my way to get any Wi-Fi 7 stuff here. I'm interested in it from a technology standpoint, is this going to make a difference for my life? Well, I also just said that there's no difference for my life between 6, 6E and 7. So, you know, there you go.
Yeah,
there may be at some point in the future when our bandwidth needs increase, and you know, things like the Vision Pro or the Quest 3, where you're streaming more and more data to these things at more, you know, higher resolution stuff, wider, you know, bigger images, bigger videos, that will be the thing that causes us to need more bandwidth in our homes. And that's fine. That's a story as old as time. Like, of course we will get there, but we're not there today. So if you're buying something new right now, I would start by looking at the 6E stuff just because you want to future proof a little bit, and then compare that to the cost of the 6 stuff, to your point, Adam, and decide, okay, am I there? Like, does it make sense to do this particular future proofing step now? Or do I do it later?
Numbers are crazy, though.
For Wi-Fi 7.
Yeah, dude. Up to 46 gigs per second.
Yeah. Someday we will care about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just feel like Tim the Tool Man Taylor, the show from the 90s. Ooh, you know, ooh, more power. Yeah. Ooh, 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 more power.
Yeah. But, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And I got to laugh because I have a good friend who works for one of the ratings companies, and he told me once, 25, 30 years ago, he goes, what it's going to come to is you're going to be able to pick the movie you want to watch tonight and tell it to download. And when you get home from work, it'll be there ready to go.
But that kind of already happened.
Yeah. No, that was saying that was 30 years ago.
I see what you're saying. Yes.
And it's like, oh, yeah, you're going to have to wait all day for the movie to download. Yeah. And you know, even with technology today, you're going to have to wait 20 minutes for the entire movie to download many gigabytes.
Yeah, but you don't have to. That's the beauty of streaming.
No, it all streams. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I laughed that that was where we were going, that someday we're going to be able to grab our movie in a day.
Yes. Yes. Online. You don't even have to go get the DVD.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember downloading Pirates of the Caribbean to my video iPod and how long that took.
Oh, yeah.
They finally put out a video iPod.
I was frustrated yesterday.
That was like one of the first movies available.
I was frustrated yesterday trying to put a movie on my iPad from my local Plex server. And Plex, they're downloading things.
Sometimes it's terrible. Yeah.
Well, it's not the best coded solution.
Yeah.
And so you have to leave the Plex app open. Frontmost and open, and I wanted to use my iPad, and so I kept like switching back and forth, and I got frustrated because I wasn't willing to leave my iPad for 10 minutes to download this movie.
Right. Well, and then other times I found like I'll tell my iPad, download over cellular.
Oh yeah,
I've got unlimited cellular on my company iPad. It's like download over cellular, but it won't do it. It just won't do it.
Nice.
Like, okay.
Well. Yep. I don't know where we're going with any of it. You know, I do know what we're doing.
Jim, Joe, Jeremy.
No, we're going to, listener Adam had a good little tip for us that's in this networking realm. So while we're here, we'll share this. And then there is one question I want to get to. I think we're going to save Cool Stuff Found for another episode. Guys, we're going to have to do another episode next week.
All right.
Yep.
I'll be
here. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Listener Adam says, I was listening to the discussion about backups in episode 1026 and was surprised about something that wasn't mentioned. While Apple no longer sells their time capsule devices, which were easy to set up for network time machine backups, most home routers nowadays allow for setting up an attached drive as a time machine destination. I have a 5 terabyte, 2.5 inch drive plugged into the USB port on my Asus router and have it shared using the router's own settings as a time machine destination. My previous Synology router could do that as well. On any Mac you wish to back up, just log into the share, save the credentials, mount the shared partition, and point time machine at the volume and let it do the backup. This can work especially well on laptops who can back up over Wi-Fi as long as the drive is mounted, and you can do that all with an alias or a shortcut. I would only do one computer's initial backup at a time just because of bandwidth, there you go. He says also, if there's a NAS in the house, you can likely designate a folder as a time machine backup there, depending on the NAS's capabilities. Given the amount of time since I heard the episode and now, you might have been told this already. Oh yeah. We might've been, but we hadn't mentioned it. So thank you for bringing it up. Yeah. You're totally right. Many routers, not all of them, but many will allow you to hang a drive and use that as time machine. And that's valuable for sure. Yeah. Yep. All right.
How did he get that to us? Did he send it to feedback at MacGeekGab.com?
He did. Go ahead. What's that?
So, yeah. I think he sent it to feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
That's easy for you to say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Feedback at MacGeekGab.com, folks. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
Yeah. Just asking for a friend.
It was funny. This week we had, I came across two emails. One was from a listener that didn't know how to email us. And I was just like, this is amazing. Like how much more, like we already say it too much. It's already become like shtick, the worst kind of shtick. But, you know, I get it. Like it doesn't sink in. It doesn't sink in. Like I get it. And then we got another email from a different listener sent in something, and it felt like a non sequitur a bit, but they said something about a problem they were having with like magnets on their Apple Watch band or something. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And they wrote us back and said, okay, look, I got to explain. That email was actually meant for the Accidental Tech podcast because they were talking about magnets and watch bands, but you guys have drilled feedback at MacGeekGab.com into my head so much that I sent it to you instead.
Beautiful.
I love it. So, but it like
Senseo.
Both of these emails came in at the same time. Like it's like, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yep.
So one or the other. Yep. Well, I've got a geek challenge for someone to send to feedback at MacGeekGab.com, and
what's
maybe
that?
You guys can answer this or not. When I say S lady,
yeah,
turn off the living room lamp. I get this little Google thing that says, you need a Google app is missing, can't do it. And then I turn around and very next thing I say is, S lady, turn the living room lamp off. It works.
Yep.
Anyone know why?
I've seen that. I don't know why. I don't know
that
why.
It's frustrating.
It's rare for me. I don't see it as often as you do now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Adam, you want to take us to one question from listener Jim? Because I think this would be a good
one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a great one to talk about. So Jim says, just picked up a new MacBook Air M3. Hey, I'm a little bit jealous. And once again, face the eternal questions. Antivirus on Apple? Needed at all? If so, do you guys use? Great show. I listen during my weekly workouts, and you guys make the time pass quickly. Well, glad to hear that. And I get smarter at the same time. Yep.
Woohoo!
And
same.
Pete, don't let those fling-wing guys get you. They're just jealous.
There you go.
Pete, can you explain what Fling Wing is first?
Yeah, that's for the uninitiated. That's a helicopter, which the definition of a helicopter is a million parts rotating about an oil leak waiting for metal fatigue to set in. So
this checks out. Yeah. As far as Jim's question, I know we all have opinions on this. I don't believe that virus protection software is necessary on the Mac. However, I run it anyway. In that I don't run anything in real time because I don't want it to slow down my Mac, but I do run malware bytes on each of my Macs once per week in a semi-automated fashion. Malware bytes has a way to automate this, but it comes hand in hand with their always running in the background scanner, and I don't want that. So I have Keyboard Maestro set a macro that runs once a week that launches Malwarebytes on every one of my Macs. And when I come to my Mac and I see that Malwarebytes has launched, that for me is enough of a reminder to hit start scan. And then it scans. And I've never had it find. The only thing I've ever had it find is like an old Word document that had a like Word macrovirus in it. But other than that, I haven't had it find anything. But I'm happy to know that it runs once a week. So I guess maybe I do think you need it, but I don't know, like in a limited sense.
Why? Or why not? Don't you want it running in the background?
Oh, I don't want something slowing down my computer. Okay. This is definitely a holdover from the days of slow CPUs and spindle drives, aka slow drives, where if supporting Windows machines, which absolutely at the time anyway, I don't really know how it is now, needed virus protection software. But virus protection software, the whole idea is it sits in the middle of everything you're doing. Every file that's accessed is scanned first before your system gets to see it. Everything you do is being, you know, filtered, essentially. And that, by definition, causes some level of latency in what you're doing. Whether that latency now is something I would notice or not, given how fast technology and how fast it is and how much it's improved, I don't know. But that's my reason for it. And I don't think viruses on the Mac are bad enough that I need to potentially give up performance for protection.
Right. That was a great Apple ad campaign too for a while. Remember that?
Yeah, I sure was.
You're coming to a sad realization.
Prevent or allow. Yeah. Prevent or allow. Right. Yeah, exactly. How about you, Adam? What do you think?
I'm same. I run Malwarebytes occasionally. That's for sure. The other things that I do, and I don't know if I'm unusual or not, but I have Apple's firewall turned on. I always have. I get notified if things are coming in or out. There's other tools you can do. You can get to run this and, to do things like that. I run with Gatekeeper on, like I don't disable Gatekeeper. I don't do like the SIP thing that people do where they turn off security protection. Like, I think it depends on sort of how you operate your Mac. You know, if you're one of these really techie geek people that, you know, you want to be able to download anything from anywhere on the internet and install it, and you've turned all that stuff off, then you might need that stuff more, to be honest. I also just practice safe computing. And I drill that into my friends and family. And like, as a matter of fact, even my mom knows this so much. She's on an iPad. And she just called me this week because she got the pop-up. And it was like, you have a virus on your computer and you need to call this number. And she immediately calls me. It's just like, but for her, it was more like, how do I stop this thing from going? Because it was actually playing audio, like, which I hadn't even heard before. Yeah, it was super annoying, and it was very hard over the phone to talk her through how to close a Safari window. It's like, but you know, it's my mom. Do you see the little blue button with the tabs? Like, it looks like two squares. No, I don't see that. It's at the very top. You know, but finally got her to it and showed her how to close the tabs, and she was fine. But you know, like I don't, you know, I don't like try to download illegal movie. I buy my movies and content, you know, from Apple, or I watch streaming, or like, you know, it depends on a lot of what you're doing. Yeah. You know, like if you're going to dark places on the internet, yeah, you might need it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But,
your, especially your mom's anecdote there brings up an interesting thing. And that is one thing I do check on the regular is in Safari's preferences extensions. I go in there and I make sure that I know every extension that's listed, because it's really easy, relatively easy, to wind up installing an extension that will do nefarious things and not even know about it. So there's that one. And then there's also if you go to Safari preferences, websites, notifications, look there too, because that's super easy to allow a website to give you notifications in Notification Center. And we've talked about it on the show fairly recently. There can be conware notifications that look like they're coming from system preferences. Say you have a virus, you click the notification, it brings you to a nefarious website and walks you down that path. So check those two things. I wind up checking them regularly enough as I think about it, like right now, or when an email comes in from one of you or something like that. But put that on your list to check once a quarter, extensions and notifications in Safari, because those are pretty, they're easier attack vectors for folks. So.
Yeah. And yeah, another one have to mention, Clean My Mac has malware removal in it, and that comes free with SetApp.
Yes.
Well, that's right. Comes with SetApp.
Yes. Right. It comes with SetApp. Yeah. Yeah.
Pete and I were thinking the same thing. Yeah. I was going to say that. I was also wondering if malware, or if Clean My Mac X had a thing for extensions. It probably does. But
it probably does. Yeah. We should dig into that. Yeah. 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 Mm. Yep. Yep. Yeah. All right. Well, we've extended our welcome here, and if my new mixer setup works, oh, it does. So I used SoundDesk again today to mix the show here from the studio. It's the same software that I used while I was on the road last week. I've learned a lot more about it. I think there were two reasons that my CPU on my laptop was flaking out. Porthos John pointed out something that we talked about when I was in Vegas, Pete, when we were in Vegas, but I forgot about. Now it's in the pre-flight script, and that is low power mode on the Mac laptops will cause things like Chrome to really crater. And so especially video in Chrome, that sort of thing, that was part of it. And then the other part of it was I didn't realize that SoundDesk had its own plugins inside it that are all running at zero latency and very low CPU usage. And so I've learned a lot because I played with it and recorded like 6 podcasts with it since. This is amazing. It's a great piece of software for $40. So, but I'm curious. I know we are using a completely different gain structure for this episode. So if you've listened this far and you have thoughts about, did we sound the same? Did we sound different? Is it better? Is it worse? Thoughts? Send it us. Feedback at MacGeekUp.com. Thank you, folks, for listening. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Thanks to our sponsors. You can learn about our sponsors at MacGeekUp.com/sponsors. Of course, coupon code MGG at Manscaped.com gets you 20% off and free shipping. Backblaze.com/MGG gets a fully featured, no risk free trial. And ZocDoc.com/MGG is where you go and sign up for free. I don't know. Have anything else to add?
Me?
I don't know. Anybody? Sure.
Don't get caught.
That's it. Thanks for hanging out, everybody.
Made on Mac. See ya.
Later.